Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of 747 Conversations. It's your host, Chris Shembra. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome to 747 Conversations. We invite you to look back through our podcast archive and find some pretty neat episodes as we consistently bring on wonderful leaders to share the stories of the people who helped them get to where they are today and how that affects their leadership style and the systems they've built. This whole podcast is on gratitude. Why gratitude? We believe that when you practice gratitude in a pro-social, empathetic, altruistic way, you can help create a genuine sense of belonging for yourself and the people around you. This whole epidemic of isolation and loneliness, a big thing our world is facing today, and we need your help to solve it. Just you showing up here today is the very first step. So we're glad you're with us. If you haven't already, feel free to click that subscribe button. You might just hear some stuff today that you want to share with your friends. If you're coming back for multiple times, welcome back. We're glad to have you. Some of my favorite moments are when you reach out and you share your great notes of what you thought of the episodes that we record. Feel free to email us, info@747club.org, with more of your questions, thoughts, comments, suggestions on who we should have next in this podcast. I think this is like episode 198, 199, 200. I've lost count, but we're honored to have you with us. Today's episode, we are introduced to by Charlie Fusco, our dear friend at ThatGirlCharlieWorldwide.com, one of the great leaders in direct marketing, radio, television, book, etc. And today, we have one of her dear, dear, dear friends, Faith Jones. Now, Faith has many professional accolades. She's overcome many traumatic experiences. But what I'm most excited about is the way that she tells stories with her soul. I'm going to capture that spirit today. I got to be honest. I don't know where we're going. See, Faith is many things. To kind of paint you a quick picture, she grew up on an isolated farm in Macau, part of China. And her grandfather was the founder of an organization called the Children of God. Now, we're going to get into that later in the story. But imagine a young girl who goes through everything that she needs to go through to somehow make it to America, find her way into Georgetown University, graduate summa cum laude, go to Cal Berkeley, get her law degree, become an international activist, an entrepreneur, and now the upcoming author of what I read literally in one stint, the 400-page epic, Sex Cult Nun, which brings to life a hidden world that she got through and she survived. Y'all, this isn't some normal podcast episode that we do that brings on Fortune 50 CEO, a businessman, a founder, whatever. This is bringing on a storyteller. And I'm excited to have you along for the ride. Faith, welcome to this podcast.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. I love the way that you describe it and how much you got out of it. So thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Today is an exciting day. I mean, tomorrow's your big book launch. You're going on all the global talk shows and you're going on Dr. Oz and you're doing all the things. What does it feel like right now to know that tomorrow millions of people will have access to your story?
Well, it's good in a way. You know, it's a culmination of years of work to create this. In another way, it's slightly nerve-wracking, terrifying, because I write in, as you said, very vivid detail about the most intimate experiences and sexual experiences and things of my life. And I've always been a very private person. So to put this out into the public, you know, that's a whole other level of healing was required for that one. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are going to talk about that vulnerability. And as you talk about in the book, we're going to talk about that vulnerability later on in the show. But Faith, I always have to start the podcast with a simple question. It's the question we've used to spark over 500,000 relationships around our dinner table in the last 6 years. It's the question that we devote our entire life to. Faith, if you could give credit or thanks to one person in your life that you don't give enough credit or thanks to, that you've never thought to thank, someone who's not in your book, who would that be?
Good question. I think a lot of the people that I would give thanks to are in my book. But I would say that one of the things that I do, I'd say the most important one would be God, because I think really God is the one that got me through all of this. And there's a lot of people I do express gratitude for in the book. My step-grandmother, my grandfather on my mother's side, other people who encouraged me, my grandmother who sent me books. You know, there's a lot of people who did things that seemed insignificant that ended up really changing the trajectory of my life. And I think that I'm very grateful for that. Even to my own parents, there, despite everything that they did, they also had good qualities that I can choose to access today. So I think I'm grateful for, but mostly I'm grateful to God, because mm-hmm. you know, through everything that I went through, that ability to know, even when my entire sense of everything that I knew and believed in had to crumble and be destroyed, that sense of knowing that there is a loving God out there in the universe is that cares for me, and that I can choose that. I can choose gratitude. I can choose positivity. I can choose to see things from a positive perspective and to gain good from it. To me, that is the fundamentally one of the most important things that helped me through all of this and helped me to be resilient and helped me to become who I am today.
God. You've had an interesting relationship with God. There have been moments in your past where you've asked for his protection. You've asked for his guidance. You've asked for his forgiveness. And you've even asked him to break you. I remember one part in your book, you had just read the prayer of Magdalene. A prayer for Magdalene, and you were in a period of reconciliation and you asked God, you gave God permission to do terrible things to you, to break your pride and spirit. How do you, because people that are listening here know that you can have many different parts of a relationship with someone, the good, the bad, the ugly. How do you retain a commitment to someone through periods of adversity, through periods of joy, through everything, you know, in between?
Well, the time you're speaking of there was when I was 12 and I was in I just moved to a commune in Thailand, and I'd been separated from my family. And, you know, that was when I went on, like, they put a sign around my neck and, you know, I was forced to undergo a month long silence restriction. And that was, I would say that when we're, what you're talking about there, right? So like asking God to break me, that's what I was told to do. That was what I was told I needed to do. And there are a lot of times I was asking God for strength to make it through what it was that I was being asked to do, or what it was I was being told God wanted me to do. But what you're talking about is when a group, a religion, a person, right, uses God as a tool of manipulation to compel people to do what they want them to do. And that's really abusing God, using God as the, saying, well, if you don't do this, then you're not in God's will, or God wants you to do this, that, or the other, right? And fortunately, I can distinguish between, you know, that now, that was other people's wishes or interpretations of what was right, not necessarily God's.
Mm-hmm. For our readers, for our listeners, to paint the picture, there was someone in Faith's life who believed that he was the modern interpreter of the words of God, and he built a following around people seeing God through his personal interpretation. This person happened to be her grandfather. Her grandfather happened to be one of the most wanted men in the world. And my question to you, Faith, is, do people have to go through great periods of adversity or manipulation or finding out things the hard way in order to gain perspective on what's right or wrong, or how we're able to interpret a situation? You know, you went through really hard times in your life to gain clarity, right? To gain perspective, to gain your own personal beliefs. Do people have to go, how do we help people get that wisdom without having them have to go through the 23, 26 years of what you went through?
It's a good question. That was really what I came to when I finally created this framework. I call it, you know, the 10 principles of conduct, or the 10 principles of high integrity people. That could be high integrity CEOs, high integrity companies. But really, it boils down to just a very few principles. And when we understand these principles, we know that if we act according to them, we won't be violating other people. And these principles are the foundation of everything that we consider the moral law and ethics, This is the foundation, and I've boiled it down into just a few simple principles. It's on one single diagram. You can see it in my TEDx talk called I Own Me. And it's getting to this point so that we have a simple way to teach people an objective standard that they can look at, that they can point to and say, okay, I know if I'm not doing these things, I'm okay, right? And if someone is trying to do any of these things to me, that's not okay. And that was, so my grandfather, just for a little background, my grandfather started a international cult called the Children of God. It later came to be known as the Family. There, if you Google it, there's tons of press on it. There are documentaries on it on Netflix and Amazon and Discovery Plus. This was a huge organization. And my, we lived communally, didn't own personal possessions. There was a doctrine of called the law of love, which was about saying, you know, sex is godly, therefore you can share sexually with anyone within the group. But then that became an obligation, and women were pressured to share with men that they didn't want to have sex with men they didn't want to, as part of their obligation to God. There was child abuse. There was other things that crept in to a group that was founded initially and foundationally on very high ideals of service to God, of giving up everything to preach the gospel and to care for others and to, you know, go into all the world. And so the people and the young people who joined this group, you know, some very young people, you know, oftentimes in their teens or early 20s, times when they're very impressionable and idealistic. That's why they joined the group, right? Gave them a sense of belonging and family. And then these other things kind of bled in, you know, from my grandfather, I think, justifying his own wishes, right? His own desires, his own kind of perversions, even. He created doctrine, misinterpreting the Bible and going against even, you know, the law, right? And which is why he was wanted by Interpol and everybody else and lived in hiding for all of my life. And fundamentally, what went wrong there, right? What went wrong with this group where they had, is that they didn't have an objective standard that they could measure my grandfather's revelations against, right? So when he said, oh, I got this revelation that God said this, they didn't have an objective standard to measure that against, to say, is this accurate? Is this okay? It was just kind of whatever he thought and however he could interpret the Bible to back it up. So I should give people a little background of the organization and the beliefs that existed there. As to your question about do people have to suffer trauma, I like to say we are not here to suffer. We are here to grow. And we all, just in the course of being a human being, are going to have trauma. We're all going to have difficult things that happen to us, right? And that level of trauma and the impact that it has on us is not necessarily based on the severity of the trauma itself. And that's what I've seen just in my own healing work and in helping others and working with other people to heal, is that, you know, one person may experience trauma of rape or, you know, sexual molestation as a child, like I did. And then someone else may experience trauma of, you know, they were ignored by their parents or they were very harshly criticized. And, but that trauma still seriously impacts them still to this day as an adult. So we all experience it in some way. I don't think we have to go through terrible things. I think we all go through difficult stuff, but it's how we deal with it that makes a difference in what we become in our lives and whether we're happy. It's how we handle it, right? Mm-hmm. Do we go and do the work? Do we do the healing work? Do we become aware of where our behaviors are coming from and our triggers. And do we really go after healing that and shifting it in our lives just to improve our lives, our relationships, our business? Because this affects every area of our lives. So I don't think you have to have it. I think everybody naturally does have some of it. We all have some trauma in our lives. And so I think these principles apply to across the board.
Yeah, trauma is usually perceived as a bad thing. And that's when our response to the trauma is not sufficient. And when that happens, it becomes post-traumatic stress. But if we use our trauma as a fuel for growth, that becomes a good thing, becomes post-traumatic growth. And you're no stranger to using this trauma as the stepping stone of what you would become. You know, to all our listeners, it's impossible to literally give you the full flavor of a 400-page memoir on a 40-minute podcast, which is why you should go support Faith's book. If you go to Amazon.com and type in Sex Cult Nun, you'll be able to order it there. And there will be more links in the show notes below. I'm skipping over a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I take you on a bit of a wild ride through, what is it, like six or seven different countries I've lived in. And so you get to the end of the book, every chapter is in a different country. And, you know, it's quite a journey. So,
I mean, she moved around. She was either living with her parents, not living with her parents, living in a place that she got tricked into going by her aunt, going to a place that was filled with love of her grandparents in America. I mean, the places and the situations are so extreme. It's a beautiful, beautiful telling of a tragic upbringing. But as you write in your book, I mean, literally as you write in your book, you were so grateful that these things happened to you. You know, you're grateful for every part of your life because it developed something in you that you were able to use for the positive. You know, my question to you, when you overcome these very traumatic experiences and you literally clawed your way into success. I mean, you, just for the listeners, Faith did not have the same educational opportunities growing up that likely you and I listening to this call did. She was homeschooled. She was self-taught. She did not read the same things that we read. They thought that the greatest education you could have was from the Bible, not from the writings of science or the literature from, you know, the common man, which they called the system. But you clawed your way into America. You got into a college. You outperformed your peers. You worked your butt off. You got a $175,000 job coming out of college because you did so well. And now here, what's that? Yeah, coming out of law school. And now here you are. Now, the question I have for you is, you used to measure your impact. You might have to tell a story around this. You used to measure your impact by how many people would sing alongside you when you were witnessing in Macau. How do you measure your impact now? How do you say to yourself, fuck, I made it. I've done enough. We're doing this. How do you measure that? How do you sit with that? How do you find contentment in what you've become?
Well, I think it's hard to measure impact now, I would say. when people like you who read the book and share with me what you've learned from it, how it's changed your worldview, your perspective, to me, that is the impact. And there's so much more that I want to do. So I don't sit around measuring my impact right now, frankly. I feel like, you know, I'm happy to get this out into the world and I want to see what kind of change it can make. But at the same time, I'm still thinking, what's next, right? How do I take this framework and these simple principles and create videos for kids so that we can be teaching them these things at a young age and give them the language and the conviction to stand up for themselves, to have self-confidence, to support themselves, to express themselves when violations happen to them. We often don't have the language to say what happened to us. This is true for companies, for corporations, HR programs. How do we teach this kind of thing as corporate ethics, right? So to me, I'm not sitting around saying, woohoo, I have such a great impact right now. I look to the future and say, what more impact can I create to help to end these abuses, to end these subconscious societal messages about women and about women as property and you know, the relationships between men and women and manipulation and abuse in, you know, the hierarchical top-down kind of using threats of punishment and spiritual manipulation. Like all of this is stuff I want to continue to address and to put into our conscious awareness. So, I don't really sit around measuring my current impact. I am, you know, but at the same point, I can still be content in my heart. I can still be happy with who I am, even if I'm continually looking forward. Something I've noticed counseling CEOs and a lot of high achievers, they often use their trauma to fuel their success. And I've spoken to some of them, and I know that they think that, well, maybe if I heal this trauma and if I am content in my life, then I won't have the drive to be successful anymore. I will, that fear, that anxiety, that thing snapping at my heels that makes me keep going and going and striving for more and more, that will be gone. And I just want to say that it doesn't stop you from doing more, but wouldn't it be nice to do more and still be at a place of peace and contentment while you're doing more instead of fear?
I want to highlight the importance of what you just said. We have a phrase at our company that says, momentum without reflection does not help us achieve our desired result. Essentially, what you're saying is you can take a pause to reflect and appreciate where you've come without losing the edge, the hunger of what you're going to innovate or pursue next. You can do both.
Yes, and I'm actually saying something even deeper. And that is when you can heal the trauma that you think is driving you, and you will still continue. If you're the kind of person that loves to create in the world and loves to do more and build more, you will still be that person. You will just be able to do it with more freedom, without the weight of that trauma, screwing with your relationships and screwing with your business ventures and making you self-sabotage occasionally, right? That's what I'm really saying. When you do that deep healing work, you will still have the fire to create because that is innate in you as your human self, but you don't have to do it based on running from something.
Science calls that, two principles. One is called grateful processing. And the second is called the broaden and build theory. Grateful processing was invented by a researcher at Eastern Washington University named Philip Watkins. And what he found is that when people could recall a negative, open, unprocessed, traumatic life experience from their past and find the positive benefit, the positive consequence of that event, and give gratitude to that event, it would destigmatize the negative. It would rewire the brain to increase positive affect and decrease depressive symptoms. Barbara Fredrickson found something called the broaden and build theory, that when you do this, when you replace a negative emotion that kind of narrows your vision of what your what your possibilities are in life, when you replace that negative emotion with the positive emotions through gratitude, it broadens your thought action repertoire needed for creativity, pride, optimism, hope, contentment, interest, right? That joy sparks the urge to play. That play sparks the urge to create. So what you were just talking about is scientifically proven.
So the first one that you mentioned, that's actually one of the steps in like a 9-step process that you can take yourself through to reprocess trauma. That's mm-hmm. one of the steps. And it's a very important one, like you said. And I actually describe this process in detail and how to do it in my first book, which I self-published. It's called I Own Me. It's a guide and manifesto for women on reclaiming ownership in their body after trauma. But of course, this process, it's a healing release process, can be applied to anything. And it was designed by a woman who is a trained therapist and now like a business coach. And she's very smart at understanding this type of stuff. So that is one of those principles. But like you said, I was using that principle without realizing what it was, right? Mm-hmm. I had gotten that principle from the Bible as a child. And I definitely credit this way of looking at things with how I was able to go through this with resilience and I think with less negative impact than these experiences have had on a lot of other people who have been through them, right? Yeah. I'm not saying it didn't impact me negatively, but I would say it was not crushing or crippling. Mm-hmm. And the reason, this is why I think it's so important to teach these kinds of techniques and tools and principles to your children, because stuff's going to happen and you're not going to be there for everything. And so if they need to have the tools to deal with trauma themselves. And one of those tools that I used came from the verse, all things work together for good to them that love God. And so because I had this dedication and belief and I knew that I loved God, right? And I said, okay, then all things have to work together for my good. Which meant that even when I was in the midst of the trauma and the pain, I would start looking for how this in the future could benefit me, mm-hmm. how the trauma could benefit me. So what you're talking about, and is a very useful exercise, is to go back and say, yeah, this bad thing happened, and but I see that it gave me these type of coping mechanism. It gave me this skill. It gave me this technique. I was able to... it helped me learn something, right? That was actually beneficial. For me, even in the moment of the trauma, I was using this technique to future pace. So psychologists call it future pacing. And basically what it does is it takes your brain out of the moment of trauma and it shows your mind that there is a future when this thing will be past. When you won't be in this painful moment anymore, there's a future and you're putting yourself there and you're saying what good may come from this in the future. So it actually combines a few different psychological techniques, which I didn't have names for at the time, right? I was just doing this myself, you know, as 10, 11, 12 years old. And, but it allowed me to see a future. And it allowed me to think about what good would come from it. So I was reframing it in my mind in that moment even. And sometimes the only good I could think of was well, this will give me compassion on someone else who's going through a similar heartbreak or trauma or breaking experience. This will make me more compassionate on others. Mm-hmm. This will help me to understand what that feels like. And sometimes that was the only good I could see at the moment. But it was enough. It was enough to give me a vision of something good in the future.
Mm-hmm. Future proofing?
Future pacing.
Future pacing. I'm going to have to look that up. That sounds pretty good. So you wrote your first book as like a manifesto on how to apply these principles into, you know, CEOs and founders' daily lives of
it's really
processing
for, it was
trauma.
Really initially for women, right? Women
for women.
Sexual harassment, abuse, rape, child abuse. So I really address all of those topics in it. These very heavy topics with, you know, specific examples, and then applying the framework to show it, give us a really different perspective. And then saying, how do we talk about these things with men in a way that is not attacking, right? In a way that is, we can share these principles. So the fundamental principle is the concept of property rights. I own me. I have a property right in my body, right? And we can use this concept of property rights to talk about all of these issues that we have in corporations, sexual harassment, all of these kinds of things. It gives us a common language that doesn't have a lot of negative stigma to it, where men and women can have honest conversations about this without all of the negative connotation and emotion that these topics usually bring up that make them very difficult to discuss. So that was kind of the core of that initial book and how, what are healing processes and how do we heal from this? But within what I teach and some of my videos and coaching and, you know, my YouTube videos, I also talk about how do we apply these principles in our companies, in our corporations, in our leadership style. How are we using it to deal with our employees in the right way? How can employees use it to understand what's expected of them in their companies and corporations? So that will probably be another book.
The amazing detailed stories and your ability to combine real world stories with these core frameworks that you've invented, you know, I must compliment you on. You have a good way of getting a point across through the power of narrative. So thank you for going there.
Well, thank you. I think I recognize the power of stories to make something come alive for a person. As a lawyer, I tend to deal in logic and principles, and I can lay something out very clearly and exactly, but that's not how we speak to the heart. And so sometimes we have to tell our deeply intimate personal stories to show how do these principles apply? What happens when they're not followed? What can happen? How do we reclaim ourselves after those things happen? Because, you know, how do we get back our sense of self after trauma and abuse? How do we learn to create healthy boundaries? So these principles of integrity, principles of conduct, gives us a whole new lens and distinction of how we can see the world, how we see our own actions, and how we can see the actions of others. It enables us to very quickly recognize manipulation, abuse, whether we are doing it or someone else is doing it to us, and helps us to create healthy relationships. Oftentimes, if we experience trauma, we may not know what a healthy relationship looks like. We may not know what healthy boundaries look like. And so we need something else. We need an objective standard outside of ourselves that gives us the language to talk about it, and that gives us the boundaries, so we can say, okay, I know I'm going to put my foot here and I know I'm right and I know this is accurate. And other people can't push us around from that point by trying to gaslight us or undermine us. So that's why I think that these principles are so, so important. And then recognizing everywhere in society where they're being violated. You know, and it begins with the principle of self-ownership. I own my body. So I am, my body is my full property. I get to fully choose what to do with it. And with that comes responsibility. If I claim full ownership, then I'm fully responsible for my thoughts, actions, emotions. And it's this taking back of responsibility for myself, even for my own emotions, and not saying you made me do this, right? Taking back that responsibility is so critical to our internal growth, but it also gives us the power to achieve our own happiness and well-being and not making that dependent on somebody else. That's real power. So it begins with that principle and then understanding if I own myself, then I also own everything I create. I own my creations, right? If I own my creations, the next level is the deal. I get to make an exchange. There's five principles that govern every valid deal. If any one of those is violated, I already know that's a violation of property right. That's some form of abuse, right? And then the final layer is impact. How much am I responsible for my impact beyond my direct control? And when we understand these, it's really just a few simple things. When we understand those clearly, it gives us a whole new way to see things. And when I teach these principles, it's not like I invented the principles, right? I identified the principles in a really clear, simple way that already exist. We all fundamentally recognize them. As soon as we see them, we're like, oh yeah, of course, that's true, right? We have this inherent sense within ourselves of these principles. And these principles are the foundation for the law. They're not the law, they're codified. Where our law is codified based on these kinds of principles, based on these principles. So everything that we consider a moral violation, right? If you say, boy, they did that was bad, right? Rape, murder, assault, those are violations of our property right in our body. Things like theft, intellectual property infringement, stealing our ideas, slander, that's destroying our reputation. That's something of value that we've created, right? We all understand these are fundamentally wrong. Violations of the deal in law are things like fraud, blackmail, breach of contract. And you know, violations of our effect, when we say what's the effect we have, even if we didn't do it ourselves, are things like, inciting violence. If a leader tells his followers to kill somebody, right, then he shares the responsibility of that person's death as well as the person who actually pulled the trigger. So recognizing these, incorporating these, it just simplifies all of this stuff that's out there, into a very simple diagram framework. You can see it on my TEDx talk, like I said. And it just gives us that starting place where we can say, this is the baseline. I'm not violating these principles, then I know I'm okay. I'm acting in integrity.
You have quite a vision. You have a unique ability to... My favorite part that you just said there was you have a great ability to be humble enough to say, I didn't invent this stuff. This stuff is stuff that any of us have access to. You were just able to communicate those principles that are set in stone, that are set in law, that are set in the rules of the universe into daily application. And that's what the world needs a lot more of. Is these third-party coaches, consultants, storytellers, writers who can come in and help us connect the dots. So, Faith, thank you for doing this work. You know, it's funny because I don't want to sit here and say, I'm sorry for what you went through. I'm grateful for what you went through because... You came out the other side 20 times stronger, able to have 20 times the impact that just someone that grew up with a cushy lifestyle that didn't have the impetus to go out and create this type of impact would have never achieved. And so I'm grateful that you went through what you went through and you have the ability to tell those stories. For everybody listening here, look, I literally just scratched the surface. I actually came into this with like probably like 200 very curious questions, whether it was one word she said or the way she changed her writing age throughout the you know, she started off the book as a young child. It was a real coming of age story. I have so many questions about the way she wrote this book. I highly encourage you to pick up this book. You're going to read a memoir style for the first 350 pages, and then you'll hear the principles that she was just talking about towards the end here in the last kind of 40 or 50 pages. So for the leaders, CEOs, founders on the call, she does great work within organizations. Please look her up. For the person in here that's saying, I feel like I'm the only one in the world that's gone through this thing. How can I ever relate to anybody else about this? How could I ever tell my story around this? Odds are you're not alone. Other people have been through what you've been through. And the good news is your trauma can be correlated to what other people have been through, and you can create that type of connection.
And you can heal. And you really can heal. And that's what I wanted to show.
Yeah, there is healing.
You can overcome. You don't have to just survive. You can thrive. And that means really living in a place of contentment, joy, peace, you know, creating healthy relationships, success in business. You can do all of that.
Love it. Well, Faith, thank you for coming on our podcast. To all our listeners, thank you for your belief in us to uncover some amazing, amazing stories. Check out this book. I mean, she's going on Dr. Oz tonight. She's got the book launch tomorrow. She's got all this crazy stuff going on. So catch it before it sells out due to the supply chain issues or something. But hope y'all are having a phenomenal day on Earth. Remember, folks, it's your world.
Also,
go explore.
I'd like to say one more thing is that if you buy it now and do it quick and send me the receipt with the date, because I've got a lot of bonuses that I'm giving away.
Yeah.
And these are things for no matter what level of interest. One of the key things I focus on is not just healing and not just understanding the principles of integrity you need for your organization, but also creating your own financial independence. So many entrepreneurs, business leaders, they are successful in their business, but they don't understand how to invest. They don't understand the principles. They don't understand how to do it. And they end up constantly on this roller coaster ride with their own personal wealth and investment. I focus on that as well in the content that I create, because I think economic independence is just critical to our own emotional well-being and support.
That is true ownership when you have independence. Well, Faith, break legs this week. I'm excited to follow this journey. I'm excited to connect one-on-one and just learn more about you, the person. It sits across the computer from me today. To all our listeners, thank you for coming. I hope y'all have a phenomenal day on Earth. Remember, folks, it's your world. Go explore. And we'll see you next episode.